Good afternoon. I'm going to talk a bit about the background of why I built my diesel bike and then go on to some of the technical details and photographs of how I actually built it. The presentation. First of all, why? I mean, we all like a technical challenge, otherwise I don't think anyone would be at the EMF camp. It is quite technical. There's a lot of things I'll talk about in a moment to actually getting a vehicle on the road, as well as actually doing the mechanical couplings. For some people, it's the novelty. There's more than a few around. I mean, it is unique, but it's not what drives me. And the main thing is the fuel economy, mostly because there's more energy in a pint of diesel than there is petrol, and secondly, the way the engine creates the power is it's more efficient anyway. So most diesel bikes have an economy of somewhere between 100 and 200 miles per gallon. There are some that claim to go further than that on a gallon, but they're actually really quite slow. My bike has a fuel economy of about 145 to the gallon. And the presentation is failing me.
Would anyone know what to have to get?
F11. No. Function F11, no.
We good?
Ah, he's still got the border on.
That one. That's as good as we can see as we want to go.
Good as we go. Okay, we'll go with that. So the economy I'm getting is about 145 miles to gallon, which when I tell people I meet in South Wales, that's enough to get from South Wales to the centre of London on a single gallon of fuel. And that is on the motorway, cruising at an acceptable 55, 60 mile an hour. Which is the speed that the lorries move at, so you're not actually holding anyone up. And although it does have a top speed of about 72 miles an hour. The next obvious question people usually ask me is it a new idea? No one else has done this, they've never seen a diesel bike. And the truth is diesel Enfields have been made from the 1970s, mostly in India. In fact, the only place where diesel bikes have been produced in mass production was India. However, they stopped only a few years ago because of pollution and environmental laws that they've introduced over there. The other thing is there's a small company in Germany called Sommer, and they've hit their target, I think, earlier this year of producing 500 diesel Enfields. The only other thing that came close to mass production is a bike called Trax, which is more of an enduro type, sort of high dirt bike type build, which was called the Trax, the T800 CDI bike. And that was based on the Smart Car engine. I believe about 20 of those were made before he went out of production and stopped. He had at least between 5 and 6 years development putting that on the road, and it looks like a new machine that you would buy rather than a self-build kit. And they're very nice machines, but I'm not sure why he came out of production. But I think one of the concerns he was having was if you spend close to 18,000 euros on a machine, you want the kind of warranty and service expectation of something you buy from Yamaha or Honda or Ford. And if you're even a very professional but small company, that is a very difficult target to hit. And the last thing is most bikes are produced as personal projects or some for some friends, which we, you know, consider a small run. As far as how many are around, I try every year to go to the English meeting, which is a weekend convention, much like the EMC, but for people with diesel bikes, and approximately 40 bikes turn up. I'd say over half of them are self-built by the people who ride them there. Then there's the German Diesel Motor Treffen in Hamm in Germany, and I've been to that about four times, and many more bikes turn up there. So on a average year, they'll have about 50 bikes turn up. The tools I've used, I mean, I live in a terraced house. I've done most of my work in a shed in the garden. Because it's a fairly big house, I often do work in the downstairs spare room because I don't have a garage, and I live in a city and I can't afford to rent a garage separately. And the tools basically are hammers, spanners, hacksaws. I use angle grinder for cutting, shaping and grinding metal. I have a pillar drill for drilling decent holes. I mean, a pistol drill is good, but it really just doesn't cut the mustard when you need to drill parallel holes in flat bars and things. I have a welder. I now have quite a nice DC a stick welder. I have a MIG as well, but MIG welders are quite expensive to feed gas, especially if you're doing slightly more than a weekend job, because the small disposable bottles you'll buy from Halfords, or I don't know if Screwfit still sell them, are very expensive per unit of gas. And then the big bottles have astronomical annual rent, or the rent-free big bottles, again, are prohibitively expensive to buy if you're doing it for a hobby. The other tool you need for doing something quite as advanced as this sort of conversion is access to a lathe. When I built this one, I had a friend with a very big lathe who's into projects and mad ideas. I don't know if he's in here now. No. He's hiding. So I would ride up to my mate's house with all the bits of material and measurements on the back of cornflakes packets and templates, and do all the lathing up there. And I've since bought my own lathe, which I'll show you later on. This is my shed. It's about 10 by 8 feet. It's very small. It's my current project in there. I've got a slightly better photo of that, but not a complete one. And you can see the general tooling I have available. In the red thing in the middle is a pipe bender. You can see the welder and the gas bottle in the corner. The lathe, pillar drill, there's a miniature anvil on the floor. I really want a bigger anvil, but I think back problem would mean I'd never get it into the shed. So that's the sort of tooling I've used to produce this, and the other thing is nothing that nothing overly special other than maybe the lathe. Because I live in a terrace house, I have no rear access to the house, and I'm on a hill, so everything that's in my shed has to come down a flight of stairs, which is why I use the spare room for most of the major assembly, so I can get it out onto the street. And this is the lathe being delivered, which is quite a task. I thought you might be interested to see how you get a lathe down a flight of steps. So the main technical problems of building a diesel bike are the power and engine choice. Very interesting. You should probably talk for hours about that, because you need enough power to get you moving, and you need it to be light and small enough to put in a two-wheeled motorcycle. And that's a balance that's tricky to hit, because all the automotive engines are really quite large, and even in cars, it's only very, very recently that the engines are built for a lightweight design. They're all very heavy, chunky, over-designed, run forever type of things. And the smaller engines of the sort of 10 to 20 horsepower are all stationary engines for stationary applications like generators or industrial equipment that doesn't need any lightweighting, such as diggers and commercial street sweepers and things. And I'll mention in a moment why I've picked this particular engine. And also the speed, because that's important, because you need to be going fast enough on the road to be safe. And that's a problem I've seen with a lot of the Enfield conversions, they use a single cylinder diesel engine, which produces anywhere between 3.5 and 10 horsepower, depending on the capacity and how modern it is. And having ridden one on the road, I'd say that 10 horsepower is not enough to keep up with modern traffic. And with the impatience of the general public to slow vehicles, it can often put you in a dangerous situation when you're in a small, vulnerable vehicle and you've got people overtaking you because they need to get somewhere faster than you. So you have to be going fast enough. And again, that hits the power on weight and size. The gearbox, that's... Again, a critical choice. On this particular one, I've used the BMW gearbox, which is an inline gearbox because the engine is longitudinally in the frame. Faces this way, goes around. And that's why so many Enfields, that's why when you mention diesel bikes or do an internet search, you'll see Enfields come up time and time again. And that's because they were one of the last produced bikes that had a separate gearbox and a separate engine. And that makes it easy because all you need to do is couple the gearbox input to the engine, which can be done with a belt to drive, chain drive, or I don't know if anyone's done it, but a gear drive if you really wanted to. And that makes building it easier if you don't have a terribly advanced mechanical background. And I'll be covering the gearbox in more detail because that's the main crucial engineering part of getting this particular bike done. And the chassis, and I'll mention a bit about the regulations in a minute. The chassis is important because it has to contain everything, it has to be strong enough to support any extra weight you put on it, and you can run into legislation issues if you're going to do it all your paperwork correctly. So coming on to the parts used in this particular project, I've picked a Kubota Z482 engine. It's 500cc water-cooled twin-cylinder engine. It produces 13.5 horsepower, but depending on which specification you read, that varies between 12 and about 15. So, you know, really, I'm not entirely sure, and I've not bothered to put it on a dyno tester to measure it. And it produces that power at 3,500 RPM. But interestingly, this engine is specced for a free running speed of 3,800, so it gives you slightly more confidence in over revving it if you ever wanted to. The frame I've chosen is BMW R80. Back about the engine is most of the stationary engines people use are slightly old, and a lot of them are out of production. A lot of small diesel engine producers over the years have been absorbed by larger corporates, so the accessibility of smaller engines over the years has actually reduced. One of them is a Ruggerfield. Used to make quite a nice air-cooled twin-cylinder engine. They were bought up by Lombardini, which is an Italian company, which means the whole range of small air-cooled diesel engines that Ruggerfield used to be are now out of production because Lombardini prefer water-cooled engines. So, you know, it's the way it goes. And this engine is used in street sweepers. It's used in industrial garden machinery. And more interestingly, it's fitted to the little French micro car that does about 45 mile an hour. That has probably been the butt of a lot of Top Gear jokes over the years. And because of that, it's available in the breakers' yards as a scrap car engine, which means I can pick up a industrial twin-cylinder modern engine that's still in production. I can still ring up a supplier and say, I want a spring or a crucial part for the injection pump, and it will be on my doorstep next day delivery, which you can't do for a lot of stuff. So it makes the engine attractive. So the frame is BMW frame. It's the particular range of our series air-cooled engines has been in production since, I think, the early 70s, mid 70s, and because of that, it's a chunky, well-built frame. It's strong. It's the BMW R series was the choice bike for globetrotters, so it is a robust, thing, as is the gearbox that's part of it. So in this, I've used the BMW R80 frame, I've used the BMW gearbox, transmission and rear wheel, and it's a shaft drive, which means I've got no chain maintenance to worry about. And the other point of interest is my little peanut tank, running out of time. So the peanut tank holds about 1.5 gallons, or 6.82 liters. And if I'm doing on a cool run, if I'm doing 145 to the gallon, that's a fair range for such a small tank. And if that was on a modern petrol bike doing 45 to the gallon, it would be quite a ridiculous machine to go anywhere in distance. So I've come from South Wales all the way to here, and I wouldn't be worried about going to a garage until I get about halfway home. The other question, an old statement people say, is they look at a modified bike and they go, oh, that's illegal, you're not allowed to do that. And that's the general attitude to a lot of vehicle modifications, where in truth, you can do a lot, and that's not being cheeky and it's not bending the rules. I mean, the MOT with a bike that's sort of a wrap bike like this, where I haven't bothered with the paint and the image and the shine, you have to find someone who does it by the book, who I found, and he will look at it and you'll go, oh, it's another interesting one you brought me, and you'll get his tick book out and you'll check the lights will work and the horn works and the steering is in good nick and the tires are not bald and it's not dripping oil and the suspension goes up and down and the brakes, which there's a machine for testing, work, and you'll get to the end and go, there you go, is a ticket, because it's a test, a safety check on the day, and believe it or not, most things on this work, even though you can probably see the rear lights are in a bit of a sorry state because I strap all my camping stuff to it every other weekend. And this only needs an MOT as a modified vehicle, because I've not cut, altered, adapted or shaped any of the frame parts. The main structure of the bike is the same, and I've had many lengthy conversations with people in DVLA offices saying, what do I need to do to register my custom vehicle properly? And we have a big conversation, and you have to ring up many times because you get a different answer every time you ring the DVLA. It's quite frustrating, but if you play the game and ring them up and keep note of what they're saying, the key points, you get an answer eventually. Because I've not cut or altered the frame, it's purely classed as an engine swap, and all I have to do is contact them and with some supporting paperwork, say what fuel is, what the new CC is, because that's a tax issue, not a safety issue, very important. And I have to provide receipts, which is a security issue, to make sure I'm not ringing vehicles. So I have to prove that I own the parts I've made it from and I'm not re-registering stolen vehicles. And that's all the DVLA are registered about. But if you do build your own frame or modify it drastically, there's something called the MSVA, which is the Motorcycle Single Vehicle Approval Route, and that's a comprehensive test of roadworthiness, and it takes a few hours to do. It costs, I think still it costs less than £200. It's a very reasonable test. The spec for that was written with the support of the motorcycling groups. The lobbyists got involved, saying, oh, you can't legislate us and tell us how to build our machines. And they said, no, we're part of Europe. And this is how we allow our vehicles to fit in with that whole European freedom of travel and everything else. And I mean, there's some travelling regulations, but that allows the test to be recognised in other countries. The SVA doesn't allow you to then sell a vehicle in the rest of Europe, because it doesn't meet that particular country's spec. So it's for this country only, but it allows you to build your own vehicle. And because it was written in conjunction with the enthusiast groups and the lobbyists, firstly, it's written, apart from a few technical technical sections, it's written in language you can read. It's written as a manual that a largely unacademic person can follow, apart from a couple of chapters, which makes it accessible. And that there is something that the pressure groups did that I'm actually quite glad of, to do with accessibility. And there's something in the law that says the law must be accessible to people. It's not a private thing. And the lobbyist groups took that to its extreme and said, okay, then, you must make this manual free. You must make it accessible, and it is. It's a PDF you can download. It's updated regularly, and because of that, you can conform. So it's you can conform, and there's not saying, oh well, I didn't know because you've made this law secret and I have to go and see a lawyer. And the other point of overstressing that is the SVA, which is single vehicle approval for cars, which I think has recently changed name over the last few years. The pressure group didn't manage that, and you have to buy the manual off the correct government department. And last time I looked at that, it was about £30. So, you know, that's one up for your pressure groups and why you should support them, really, because they can make a subtle difference. The last thing, tax is important, which is why you must get your registration right. And you know, it's there's no difference in fuel type for motorcycles because it is unusual, but you must get your engine size right to be in the right taxation branch. This is not the only bike I've made. I've made a couple of others, and I'll briefly just show you a couple of photographs. That's the first one I made. It's got a very heavy V-twin East German engine. It's quite a modern engine for its build. Again, it was a very out-of-production engine. So that was less powerful than this one, weighed about 2.5 times the amount. It built in East Germany before the wall came down, which meant when it blew up, after it'd been on the road for 6 months, I could not mend it, and that was the end of that. That's another one. Again, it's more of a rat bike. That photograph is taken in Germany, in Ham at the diesel motorbike meeting, and that has a Volkswagen 1.9 litre naturally aspirated diesel engine in it. Absolutely fantastic machine to ride. It was like flying through the air on sort of open engine biplane. It's fantastic. And the interesting part on that is there is no gearbox in between the engine and just under what the battery is. I can't run and point. You can see the flywheel and the starter gear wheel on it. The clutch couples the drive shaft straight to the engine. There is no gearbox. It's like driving in top gear all the time you're moving. And pulling away was a bit sluggish, not dangerously so on the road. You could keep up with modern traffic and not have your horn blown at, not being blown out by horns on traffic lights. It would roll along quite easily at about 15 to 18 mile an hour without juddering, because it was on tick over, and because the diesel engine produces a flat torque curve, so the torque remains about the same through the rev range. Obviously, as the engine speeds up, the torque power means power ramps up. And somewhere between about 45 and 70 mile an hour, it would accelerate and move like a really powerful sports bike, despite looking like a wreck. And that particular one had a top speed of 104 mile an hour. And because I've had it in Germany, I can say that in front of everyone without worrying. There's some cop going, ah, yes, he's just admitted to something. I'm out of time. Oh, we started late. Can I? 2 minutes, right. Sorry, so that's about it. The current build, going back to rebuilding the thing. So again, building the flywheel. The flywheel had to be adapted to take the BMW clutch and then align it to the gearbox. There's some measurements. I was going to talk about all this. So all the measurements have to be in alignment, because it's two shafts that couple. You have to make sure they're absolutely facing each other, otherwise you'll rip the center out of the clutch instantly. You have to fit it in the frame. Again, I think I mentioned I didn't cut the frame, so I was going to talk about all this in detail. Sorry, I'm flying through it. It's making up some templates for the engine mount. So engine mount out of templates, cut out with an angle grinder. Rule zero, never be on fire. Because I'm rushing at the minute, I couldn't show you the photograph with curtains in the back room to say that this is in my spare room. There we are, it's curtains, I'm in the spare room. And the rest of the bill, man. And there we are, that's the complete machine. The other interesting thing is my other bike blew up shortly before building this. I had everything ready. I put a lot of thought into it, and a lot of the thought takes longer than actually making something. So from actually saying, right, I am actually going to start this project, to using it to go to work on, was about 10 days of manic angle grinding and running up to my mate's house and using his lathe. Thank you.